Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 56 on October 14, 2009. We are still in Ocean Park, Maine, where yesterday morning I got to spend some time digging lakes and canals at low tide with my grandson, who's three. And I have to say, the sight of him running full tilt to fetch a bucket of seawater to dump in a lake that I've just dug is pretty good stuff. So we're having a great time here in Maine. This week's interview is with another three-year-old's grandfather, Steve Shank, an Arizona Kindle user who was one of the first 300 employees of Apple and is a technologist, a retired technologist, now following the Kindle phenomenon with a long and informed perspective. Sony is in the news again this week with a dramatic embrace of the EPUB standard for ebooks, a standard not currently supported by the market's current 800-pound gorilla named the Kindle. I'll also have news of a Boston-area library that can't keep its 10 new Kindles on the shelf due to strong interest in a trial made possible by a private donation to the library. For this week's tech tip, I'm going to discuss how you can buy and feed a Kindle even if you live outside the U.S., In content, I'll have a preview of Stephen Windwalker's new book that is designed to save us Kindle users hundreds of dollars. As always, I'll close with your comments this week, including quite a few in response to the Nicholson-Baker interview that I had in last week's episode. You can subscribe to this podcast at the iTunes and Zune stores or by going to the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. With that, let's turn to the news. Sony announced on August 13th that it plans to convert its ebook store to the industry standard EPUB format with digital rights management from Adobe by the end of this year. Brad Stone of the New York Times broke the story a day in advance of Sony's announcement, and the news moved quickly through the blogs where I get most of my news about the Kindle. Abby at iReaderReview.com wrote, "Wow, new Sony readers, lower prices, adding wireless, and now going with EPUB. Sony seems to have suddenly decided e-readers are the next big thing and that they want a bigger share." That reference to adding wireless refers to a lot of rumors out that Sony is about to announce a unit that will have some kind of wireless delivery, whether it's Wi-Fi or anything approaching Amazon's 3G network. We won't know until there's actually an announcement. It's just rumors at this point. Paul Biba of Telereed.org gushed, quote, "This is just fantastic news. Sony is taking a bold step that will benefit e-book readers more than any of us can say." Telereed's David Rothman took Brad Stone to task, though, writing that, quote, "The New York Times unwittingly plays down the new power that Adobe will enjoy within the ebook industry. For example, very possibly the ability to raise the prices of DRM, digital rights management related technology, or make other unwelcome changes in the future." The move by Sony means they will be able to provide content from their e-reader store to other devices able to read the EPUB format. Up till now, those devices do not include the Kindle, and Amazon does not sell EPUB formatted ebooks in the Kindle store. A couple of commenters to the Telereed post predicted the time may be coming when Amazon will join the EPUB party. "Amazon will respond," predicted Bruce Wilson. "Too much market pressure for cross-platform use. EPUB is the MP3 of reading, and the online store is not quite the behemoth before which all other stores will bow. If Kindle adds EPUB, they stay the majority reader and store. If they stick with Mobi only," that's their current format in the AZW extension, "if they stick with that, they become the new Betamax." A Telereed commenter named Asphalt agreed, writing, "In these early days of e-ink devices, Amazon's initial plan was reasonable from their point of view. If they were going to sink all of that R&D dollars into designing and manufacturing the Kindle, they initially needed to guarantee themselves a source of revenue downstream in the form of ebook purchases. Once that customer base has grown to such a level as to be self-sustaining and self-perpetuating," has it already? It's got to be close, he writes. "Amazon will be able to change its model and make even more money. It will be excellent for owners of other devices to be able to purchase material from Amazon too. But if Amazon doesn't open the Kindle to other formats with a firmware update, they will not just lose us Kindle owners, they will have betrayed us. And the customer who feels betrayed will not just silently move on to greener pastures." Maybe EPUB is what Jeff Bezos had in mind when he made this statement on June 15th at the Wired magazine conference. He said, in the future, Amazon.com's Kindle ebook reader will display more book formats than its own, end quote. While he did not specifically mention EPUB, which was developed by the International Digital Publishing Forum, IDPF, to be a standard format for reflowable digital books and publications. You have to imagine that such a widely supported standard would be at the top of the list of formats that Amazon would consider adding to the Kindle's repertoire, particularly since Amazon now owns Stanza, an e-reader program based on EPUB. Sony's current readers do support EPUB, as will its two new models arriving later this month, and so will the much-anticipated Plastic Logic reader due in early 2010. Also in the news this week, via Andras Baston's KindleWorld.blogspot.com blog, I learned that the public library in Belmont, Massachusetts, is experimenting with 10 Kindles donated by a private giver. Andras linked to a lively account by WickedLocal.com. I love that name. That's a good New England website, wickedlocal.com, on August 10th, which said in part, library users have been lining up for a chance to check out one of the library's 10 recently acquired Kindle e-readers, which have been flying off the shelves since library staff quietly put them out 2 weeks ago. Quote, we put them on the shelves and in a half hour they were all gone, said Maureen Connors, the library's director. The library purchased the Kindles 3 weeks ago using a $6,000 donation from a local couple, Liz and Graham Allison. Graham Allison said, it's an experiment well worth trying and an experiment the library's budget in no conceivable world could support. It'll be really interesting to see if in 3 months from now people are still interested in checking them out. Wicked Local reported that on a recent morning, all the Kindles were checked out, and there was an additional 42 patrons who had signed up to reserve one. About half of the Allison's gift went toward purchasing the Kindles themselves. The rest went to pay for downloading 50 books and purchasing leather covers, with so many money left over to buy books in the future and cover unanticipated costs or repairs. When I return to Cambridge, Massachusetts, here from Maine, in early September, I hope to schedule an in-person Kindle Chronicles interview with the folks at the Belmont Library and perhaps with the Allisons, who made the experiment possible with their pretty amazing gift. Time now for the tech tip. From time to time, I hear from listeners from outside the U.S. who are interested in the Kindle, and I've felt their frustration at not being able to purchase a Kindle or Kindle content in any way as easily as we can here in the U.S. But listener Charles Tay in Singapore pointed me to a variety of blog posts that seem to offer a reliable workaround, and there is also a long thread in the Amazon forum which contains useful advice on this topic. To buy a Kindle if you don't live in the U.S., there's no getting around the requirement of having it be delivered to a U.S. address, but you can use a non-U.S. credit card to make that purchase. Many posters have had their Kindles shipped to friends in the U.S. who then reship them overseas. The Kindle arrives at the U.S. address registered to the buyer, and one thing people have done is to purchase books at the same time as the Kindle so that it arrives at their friend's U.S. address with the content already on it via the WhisperNet. If you don't have a friend or family member in the U.S. who can help you with the Kindle reshipment, you can use services such as usglobalmail.com. And I think there's a number of others that you can find if you Google for reshipping or something like that. Once you receive your Kindle at an international destination, getting content can be problematic if you don't have a U.S.-based credit card attached to your Amazon account. If you follow the thread on this topic in the Amazon forum that I'll link to in the show notes, you'll see references to using a gift certificate as a way of getting around geographic blocks on content purchases. I won't detail the steps here, but if you're not aware of this technique, you'll be able to find information on the internet showing you how to do it. If you live in the U.S. and purchased your Kindle with a U.S. credit card set up as your one-click payment method, you won't have any trouble purchasing Kindle content when you travel internationally. The only difference is you won't be able to buy content directly downloaded to your Kindle because there will be no WhisperNet wireless in foreign countries. You'll download your purchases to your computer and then move them to the documents folder of your Kindle using the USB cable. I want to thank Charles Tay in Singapore for educating me on this topic, and I want to say that I hope the rumors that he's heard of the Kindle being available in Singapore next year turn out to be true. And Charles, I hope you're enjoying your Kindle 2, which I understand has arrived. A note related to last week's tech tip, Len Charnoff has done a very helpful video tutorial inspired by last week's tech tip about Zoolert.com, Zoolert.com. I'll have the link in the show notes, or you can look for it at Len's site, which is timesavingtutorials.com. Steve Shank, who was one of the first approximately 300 Apple employees and the founder of Apple Japan and Apple Australia, was also the founding president of Symantec. He is now a mostly retired Kindle devotee who is watching Amazon's success with the device from the perspective of 35 years in the technology business, dating all the way back to the Apple II. He reached out to me after discovering the podcast and has emailed me lengthy observations about the Kindle that have intrigued and educated me. So I was glad for the opportunity to speak with Steve in person via a rock-solid Skype connection that makes it sound as if we were in the same room instead of three time zones apart in Maine and Arizona. He lives on a golf course with grandchildren nearby, including the three-year-old he was proud to include in the portrait photo that he emailed me for the show notes. I'll jump into our interview here where Steve is remembering his early days with Apple.
We had two buildings and three Steves, Steve Wozniak, Steve Jobs, and myself. And we were located in two buildings and trying to sell a product with which not everyone understood what you could ultimately do with it. It had all of 16 kilobytes of memory. And if you could afford the extra several hundred dollars, you could move that up to 65 kilobytes of memory. And it was one of those transitionary periods in the marketplace in which a brand new technology comes and ultimately changes the entire world. And it was interesting to come into work every day and to discover some new way in which the computer was being used.
Things that you hadn't foreseen, but just they were sort of dawning as you were going along.
Exactly right. Up until then, the Apple II, as was our first product, was largely a do-it-yourself product in which you programmed it yourself with built-in basic language. And some people got very creative in making it do real things. So it was one of those once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, at least for we employees, to be in the dawn of a new industry and something that not only affected and changed the rest of the technology ecology system, but our neighbors and our children's teachers and the people around us. So it was a real heady period of time.
Were you mainly in the marketing end at Apple?
Yeah, I had recently come back from an international assignment for a small company in which I lived in Japan. My family and I lived in Japan for almost 4 years and came back, and it was at a time so early in Apple's development that they needed some help in developing the international aspect of their business. We could hardly build enough to keep the domestic demand going. But having been through this before, I suggested that that was the time that we should start building for an international development, and we ultimately did that.
And you were particularly involved in opening up Apple in Japan and Australia, right?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And so it again was a period in which you had to go explain to marketplaces why they ought to love this product, when in fact there wasn't a lot to do with it at the time, but we prevailed.
Well, now, and then, of course, there's an interesting parallel with the Kindle. In talking with Ian Fried a couple of times, I get a feeling that they have that same heady sense of being part of something revolutionary. Do you, in your mind, equate Apple's introduction of its computer with what Amazon's doing with the Kindle, or what are the similarities and the differences in terms of sort of the historic impact that's we're going to see from well into the future?
Well, I think that Amazon has been the consummate facilitator in this case, because I do remember in the days that I was traveling extensively internationally that we had a brief fling, the marketplace that is, had a brief fling with ebooks back then, with something called the Rocket Reader, as I'm sure you're aware of.
Oh yeah, the Rocket Book.
And, or the Rocket Book. Mm-hmm. And in my case, what I did was to load the Microsoft e-reader, mm-hmm. the software, mm-hmm. and could then order ebooks. And I do remember carrying around and a number of evenings in my hotel room with the notebook perched on my stomach, reading novels late into the night. Mm-hmm. And so we had, I think the marketplace had a brief introduction to ebooks that faded for quite a period of time as the standards shifted and the cumbersome form factor of the notebook, which was the prevalent device of choice at the time, was found to be wanting. And so I think that Amazon has come along again to revive that vision by introducing a really user-friendly form factor unit in the Kindle. Mm-hmm. And it's that simplicity of use and the convenience of being able to carry that around, which is, I think, brought back to many people, including myself, the pleasures of reading. And so they ought to feel very, very good about that.
Did you and your wife buy yours shortly after it was introduced in November of 07 or a little later?
No. We bought the first unit in February of this year.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Largely because we have 1,800 books in our library and physically have no place else to put the books.
No more room.
Yeah. So, for a long period of time, I thought, well, just keep buying the books. But it became clear that we had stacks of books sitting around in ever-decreasing space here. So we bought the first one in February, early February, and being the technologist in the family, I took the time to set it up and become acquainted to it and help my wife understand how to use it. And it wasn't but four days later that I said, geez, I got to have one of these myself.
And, there was no possibility of sharing, you could tell.
No, not at all. And I'd have to say that I had gotten away from reading in the sense of reading books. Most of my time was reading on the computer and the internet and all of those things related to what I've done for so many years. And I may be using it more than my wife, who actually is a member of two or three book clubs and is constantly reading herself. So I feel very good to be getting back to reading.
Are you also still buying books in print, or have you shifted over to where most of your book reading is on the Kindle?
Well, in my case, all my book reading is on the Kindle. In my wife's case, almost all of it is on the Kindle. However, the book clubs that she belongs to will occasionally pick books that are not available in ebook form.
Right.
And then she has to go out and get one of those.
Now, in some of our email exchanges over the past few months, I've been intrigued because it seems like you've had a sense, or really an early hope, that Amazon was going to have a larger and a longer-term vision for establishing the whole ebook market as opposed to just figuring out a way to move lots of units. And I think a lot of us are sort of watching Amazon to try to figure out is it taking a longer view or is it more narrow? What's your latest assessment of them on that dimension, on sort of how big they're thinking?
Well, I've thought about our email exchanges, and it's an excellent question to be asked, and it's a rather impertinent one to try to answer. Because we don't know what Amazon's vision and mission statement are. Mm. Now, they have one that is stated, and I looked that up. It said, to build a place where people can come to find and discover anything they may want to buy online. The question is whether the Kindle and that mission statement fall within the Amazon's total mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so without knowing their overall umbrella vision and mission statement, it's a little difficult to say whether they're doing the right thing or not. But I think that we could take a look from the outside looking in. So rather than trying to advise Amazon, we can consider some scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
It's my thinking that most companies have a corporate DNA, which is kind of set by the founder, who then hires people that support that dream, and then up comes a company that is kind of specialist in the area that they've chosen.
Kind of a culture.
It's a culture, but it's something even more ingrained, more fundamental than that.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, being a member of early member of Apple, Apple is best known for their creative and innovative design of hardware.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been all that well known for software.
Mm.
Microsoft, on the other hand, has one would say that they're successful. I guess those that have problems with their operating system might say otherwise.
Mm.
But they're a software company, and their hardware introductions have not always been successful.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon is an online distribution company.
Mm.
And so you have to ask whether getting into the hardware business is a part of that DNA.
Yeah.
And if it's not part of that DNA, whether they recognize that it's not and are willing then to apply the resources and the business management that would allow the Kindle division to be basically a different company.
Huh.
And so one could say if they're not prepared to do that, nor even wanting to do it, what an interesting strategic move for them to have developed the Kindle to stimulate the ebook segment, for which they now step away in the long term and concentrate on, in my mind, I think they have to push for standardization in the ebook industry, so one reader can read a James Patterson book regardless of where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And that Amazon concentrates on doing distribution arrangements with other hardware manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
And pushes for standardization, and now they stay within their overall mission statement, which is to build the best and easiest to use online distribution system.
Hmm. Interesting. Do you see the Kindle app for the iPhone as sort of a first possible step in that scenario?
Well, assuming that this wasn't just by accident, I would say yes.
Hmm.
Because there's always feature creep in products like this, in which today we're satisfied with the basic offering of a Kindle, of reading books on a page. But there is convergence happening in the industry, and at some point you're going to want a device that gives you spontaneous access to information, a la the internet, allows you to read books. Perhaps the same device, because it has a display, will show movies, play games, make telephone calls, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
It's not clear to me that Amazon is prepared to get into that marketplace against Apple and Sony, and in fact, anybody that makes a cellular phone is into the business of putting those features into smaller and smaller devices. So again, it points to me that it would suggest that perhaps their strategy ought to be one more on getting back to the core business of setting up distribution agreements with those hardware manufacturers and becoming the source of the books themselves.
Yeah, if the goal had been to jumpstart the whole ebook industry, that it looks like they're getting pretty close to being able to say they've accomplished that. And maybe then they start promoting the EPUB standard and moving in that direction.
Exactly right. It seems in the past week here, we've hardly gone a day without somebody announcing a new source or a new offering of an ebook reader. I know that there are a couple of providers in the UK. Sony has introduced or talked about some new ones, Barnes & Noble. And so trying to stay ahead of that pack and putting more and more features into their unit, I'm not sure that that's what Amazon really wants to do.
Yeah, yeah. Did you read, I think you did read the Nicholson Baker piece in The New Yorker.
Yes.
And what was your take on it?
Well, listen, there are those of us that are on the West Coast that, particularly from the Silicon Valley part of the world, in which we look at the technology glass as being half full. Hmm. There are others that look at that glass as being half empty. And, you know, the thing that has kept me going through my career has been the enthusiasm of seeing what something new can do to enhance the way we do old things. Hmm. And so, yeah, the Kindle could use more things. But right now, it does what it advertises. It shows you books. It lets you read them. Mm-hmm. In fact, it lets you read them outside, which in today's technology is something unheard of in digital cameras and anything that has an LCD display. Mm-hmm. Once you get outside by the pool, they're basically useless. And so Amazon has done a pretty good job of a first or second generation product. So, yeah, would I like other things for it to do? Probably so, but right now I'm pretty content with what it does. And so when I hear people complaining about the device being not the perfect one, I can't think of anything, including our own Apple II when we introduced it, that didn't have a long way to go before it matured into a real, absolute usable product.
Now, you sent the photo that you sent is going to be great to run with the podcast. That's of your granddaughter, right?
That's right.
How old is she?
She's 3.5 now, uh-huh. And she has a new baby brother, and so a lot of our time is spent in babysitting. They happen to live close to us. My daughter and her husband met in culinary school in France and have opened up a French bistro here close at hand. So,
cool.
Yeah, it really is.
Do you ever look at her and look at your Kindle and wonder how she's going to be reading when she's in college, or just sort of zoom ahead as to what role technology might play in her life?
Well, it's not just reading. It's how she's going to acquire and work with information.
Yeah.
Today's generation and the ones coming up are so open to the way they get their information that it's a little scary that at one point they're looking at their telephone, and when they step into another room, they may be on the their computer or their game device, and it's all getting mixed up. And so I'm not sure. It's a good question. I haven't thought about it. How pure books will remain.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one of the things that I particularly appreciate about the Kindle is the availability of the dictionary that's there for immediate use.
Mm-hmm.
When my wife was reading books, I mean physical books, I bought her several versions of things like the Franklin dictionary, mm-hmm. calculator device, right?
Right.
And she would sometimes take it with her, remember to take it with her. And then as she was reading, if she found a word she really needed to know, she would take the time to put the book down, bring up the little calculator, type in the word, and get the meaning. All of that was a disruption to the reading process.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the Kindle's case, just that ability to, within a second or two, toggle down to the word and see the meaning and get on with the reading is one of those subtleties that that brings pleasure to reading the book and taking information. So this integration of information sources in real time is what I think that the younger generation is getting used to.
Yeah, Yeah, it's fun to imagine. My grandson is 3 years old too, so I have the same time frame when I wonder how he'll be interfacing with technology when he's my age.
And if you really get crazy about this, you think a generation past them, or a couple of generations.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what are their, you know, what our grandchildren are going to be facing, and what their grandchildren are.
Yeah.
Except, I guess, mounting debts.
That's right. Yeah, it'll be stranger than any science fiction that anybody's writing now, I imagine.
Exactly so.
Well, this is great, Steve. I really enjoyed visiting with you and just getting to know you online as a result of the podcast. So it's I've always enjoyed the thought that you were looking at this device from a long history in technology. So this has been fun to talk to you about it.
And same for me. And I... when all is said and done, I love the device. Mm. So I'm a Kindle fan, and I carry it around wherever I can, and I'm ready for spontaneous reading. So they may be making fancier units in the future, but what I have now is just fine.
Yeah, me too. Although I will be getting any fancier unit they make. I owe it to my listeners to just keep investing in this stuff.
Well, it's your job.
That's
you gotta
right.
Do it.
That's what I keep telling my wife. I want to thank Steve for taking time for the interview, and I look forward to continuing our email dialogue as the Kindle adventure continues to unfold. Time now for Kindle content. Stephen Windwalker's latest guide, released in the Kindle store August 4th and now available for $2.99, is titled Free: How to Get Millions of Free Books, Songs, Podcasts, Periodicals, and Free Email, Facebook, Twitter, and Wireless Web with Your Amazon Kindle. I bought it and finished reading it today, and I can recommend it as a good source for ideas on how to save money on Kindle content. One tip which I hadn't seen before is an alternative to the content tip I had 2 weeks ago on number 54 from Dave Emberson's Kindle 2 cookbook, which used the Gutenmark prettifier tool. That required use of your computer to download a book from Project Gutenberg and then improve the formatting of it using Gutenmark. And it worked great on The Warden by Anthony Trollope, which I finished just a few days ago. In Steve's new book, I learned about Project Gutenberg Magic Catalog, which is another way to handle Gutenberg content. It enables you to download Project Gutenberg books directly to your Kindle without having to go through your computer, and with formatting equally as good as what came across using Gutenmark. Here's how it works. If you happen to be reading Steve's book, you can simply move the cursor with the five-way controller or the scroll wheel to the URL listed at locations 175 to 81 in Chapter 3, which is titled Find and Download Free Books from Kindle Compatible Services. Otherwise, from anywhere on your Kindle except the Kindle store, you can just type a search phrase such as Gutenberg Magic Catalog and then move the five-way to the right until you can select Google for the search. Either way, when you get to the URL, which is freekindlebooks.org/magiccatalog/magiccatalog.mobi, your Kindle will display, click here to download the Magic Catalog of Project Gutenberg eBooks, Mobi Edition. After you click on that link, you'll see a dialog box which reads Download File. Click OK on that, and within a moment or two, you're going to see a document on your home screen that begins The Magic Catalog by Jim Adcock. I'll read from Steve's book on what to do next. Steve writes, "Just open that document and you will find yourself within a rich catalog of Project Gutenberg files. Initially, until the Kindle system indexes your Magic Catalog, you will be able to search this catalog only by using your Kindle's Previous Page or Next Page buttons, or the Kindle menu's Go to Location and Go to Beginning features. This can be a slow process. However, once the catalog has been indexed by the Kindle system, you will be able to use your Kindle's powerful search features to type in any keyword, author's name, or title word, and view clickable search results within seconds. Once you find an ebook or other document you wish to read in the Magic Catalog, just select it with your Kindle's five-way or scroll wheel, and you'll see a dialog box like the one in the screenshot shown above, which if you have the book, you'd see that screenshot. Click OK and wait a moment or so. When you see the word Done appear at the upper left of the Kindle display, press the Home button and momentarily you should see the newly downloaded ebook on your home screen. Using that method, I was able to find the Warden and download it to compare it with the previous way of getting it off of Project Gutenberg. One advantage of Gutenberg Magic Catalog is that it dispenses with a fairly lengthy legal boilerplate at the start of any Project Gutenberg book, instead offering a link to go to projectgutenberg.org for details. So with the Magic Catalog downloads, you'll have fewer next page presses to get to the actual book. Steve is making chapters 1, 2, 6, 8, and 9 available for free download. I'll have a link to that in the show notes that you can save as an HTML file, which is how I did it, and then transfer it to your Kindle wirelessly for 15 cents in the AZW format, or you can send it to your name at free.kindle.com using, and then use the USB cable to get it to your device. Turning now to your comments, I received lots of comments on my interview with Nicholson Baker, both as emails and also a lot ended up on the show notes page, thekindlechronicles.com. So please be sure to check that out. You'll find a lot of very well-written and interesting reactions to that interview. Here are some that came in by email. Peggy Pellet wrote, "Interesting interview, just my 2 cents worth. I really like the gray-green screen of the Kindle. I find it easy on the eyes and I can read for hours. If the Kindle screen was white and lit up, it would be like reading on my computer. That's okay, but I don't want to read a book on it." Dan Myers emailed, "Guess the idea that struck me regarding Nicholson's comments on the Kindle was Moore's Law. It states essentially that the computer speeds double exponentially every 2 years. Just in the next few years, there is likely to be a dozen new e-reader models out from Amazon, Sony, Plastic Logic, Samsung, etc. It seems hard to believe that most of his concerns regarding lighting, page turning, won't be addressed one way or another by one of these new models." Larry Goss emailed, "I liked Nicholson Baker's idea of using reverse imaging on the Kindle. I think this would make it easier to read in low-light situations. It would have to be selectable, of course. As it is, the Kindle is vastly superior for reading in broad daylight, superior even to a book which suffers from glare off the white page background, and I wouldn't want that aspect of the Kindle to change." It sounded as though Baker didn't order a cover when he bought his Kindle. I can't imagine trying to use a book light without having a cover to clip it to. And I can't imagine anyone trying to do this for more than a few seconds before it became apparent that a cover would help. Every K2 user, including those who criticize, needs to know that it's possible to change the fonts to improve Kindle's legibility." And then Larry includes a URL, which I'll include in the show notes, where it's a hack that you can choose different fonts for your Kindle. And he says that he has installed the most popular font, Helvetica 2, and that it has made a huge difference. Larry continues, "I think critics need to experience the Kindle for a month or two before they condemn it. It might not be perfect, but nothing is, and the Kindle's many wonderful features are far more than enough to compensate for its minor shortcomings." From Charles Tay in Singapore, that's the fellow that I referred to in the tech tip, "I started reading on Kindle for iPhone before moving over to Kindle 2 screens. It is because of Kindle for iPhone that sparked my interest to buy Amazon Kindle 2. I have received my Kindle 2 and am spending lots of time reading on it. Reading on iPhone more than 30 minutes can be tiring on my eyes, and I find Kindle 2 screen much more relaxing." From Len Charnoff, "I thought you might enjoy the ongoing struggle for the family Kindle. My wife and I are avid readers. We also share a love for mysteries and enjoy novels by Rowbotham, Coben, and Pearson. I was naive to think we could survive with one Kindle. We have separate cell phones, computers, digital cameras, and iPods. The other day, I knew it was time to purchase a second Kindle. I work part-time as a manufacturer's rep. When I go on long trips, my wife always says, 'Drive carefully and give me a call when you get to the motel.' This time, all she said was, 'Tell me you're not taking the Kindle.'" Yes, I would agree. It's time for a second Kindle in the Chernoff family. Peggy Pellet emailed on a different topic regarding the Kindle Chronicles Extra that I put up from PodCamp Boston 4. She wrote, "I just listened to the PodCamp podcast. Thanks for loading it. I read Look Me in the Eye some time ago, enjoyed it a lot, so it was interesting to hear the author speak about the Kindle from his point of view. There seemed to be a little hostility occasionally, but you handle it well. It seems that the same complaints come up over and over like the flash when you turn the page. I don't even notice it anymore. Maybe I am just a gadget freak and that adds to my liking it no matter what. All in all, I really like the format. Instead of a one-on-one interview, it was a group discussion. Maybe you could have a group interview on the Kindle Chronicles every now and then. Have two or more guests who have differing opinions. Just a thought." That's an interesting idea, Peggy. I really did enjoy that format at PodCamp Boston, and so I might want to try something like that in the future for the podcast. One thing I've thought about is a Blog Talk Radio live call-in show where we could hear from listeners and record an episode of the podcast that way. So sometime down the road, I think I'm going to look into that. Dan Myers wrote in response to the PodCamp Boston podcast, "Holy smokes, maybe it's normal sequence of discussions for those events, but my feelings were, at 5-minute point, I'd have been hiding under table with blistering attacks on Kindle. At 10-minute point, I'd have been standing on table getting defensive about Kindle. At 20-minute point, conversation was quite insightful. I've always kind of wondered why Amazon provides internet browser access on the Kindle," Dan continues. "The discussions about virtual discussions of books on the Kindle would seem to be an area where Amazon would utilize the browser to provide more book features for the to the user. I've also been wondering why Amazon didn't pay X number dollars so people could keep copies of 1984 on their Kindles. It was interesting to hear the technical reasons behind it." If you have a comment, I'd love to hear from you. You can send me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com. You can also leave an audio comment by calling 206-666-2713. 30 seconds to a minute is a good length for use on the show. And please say your name carefully and maybe spell it out for me so I'll know who you are to introduce the audio on the podcast. You can also leave comments on the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. And there have been lots of good comments on the show notes lately, so be sure to check them out. If you'd like to be included in my Kindled Spirits email alert list, please drop me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com. I send people on the list an email the moment I've uploaded a new episode, as well as occasional alerts on late-breaking Kindle news. And from time to time, I turn to the Kindled Spirits for help in preparing for an interview, as I did for last week's interview with Nicholson Baker. I had my time sequence wrong the last time I mentioned this, but next week on August 17th, Monday, is when I could use your help generating support for a panel that I propose to give at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. That's going to be March 12th through 21st of 2010. My title is Taming the Kindle Guidance for Readers and Authors, and I've received a favorable response from the staff at this point, but a big part of their decision rests on votes at their panel picker for the conference, and that goes live on Monday. I think it's from August 17th through September 4th. If you go to sxsw.com/interactive and then look for the panel picker, there will be a place there where you can find my session, and I haven't tried it yet, but there must be a pretty simple way just to click on it to indicate you think it would be a good panel. And please feel free to pass the word to your networks. For next week's show, I'm lining up an interview with Michael Seringhaus. He is a third-year Yale law student who I recently spotted because he'd written an insightful column about legal issues around ebooks, not just Amazon's 1984 problem, but the entire range of, are we buying is a license? What parts of it are enforceable? What parts aren't? So I think he's going to be a fascinating person to talk to. He's up in Nova Scotia now, so we're trying to work out the logistics of either finding a landline or possibly a Skype connection for an interview. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monagat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA PromoNet. This afternoon, I went down to the beach with my Eterol and recorded some of the waves and the sounds of the beach. So after the music, I'll close with some moments of sound from Ocean Park. This is Len Edgerly from Ocean Park, Maine, for the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.